Hello, everyone. Hope you had a great weekend. I'm Coy, grateful to be part of your day right here on CNN 10. We're going to make this an awesome week. Coming up, we're going to look at a Supreme Court case that could determine the future of the internet. But first, we'll start with news out of the Russian-occupied territory of Crimea. Crimea is a peninsula on the north coast of the Black Sea. Russia formally annexed the region from Ukraine in 2014, and they've occupied it ever since. That same year, Russian President Vladimir Putin began building a bridge connecting the Crimean Peninsula to Russia. But on Saturday, as Russia continues its war against Ukraine, the 12-mile Kerch Strait Bridge linking Crimea to Russia was hit by a blast that killed at least three people. The attack also did significant damage to the bridge, which is an important supply chain for Russian troops fighting in southern Ukraine. This bridge holds strategic and symbolic importance for the Russian government. In response to the attack, the Ukrainian government applauded the damage, but didn't take responsibility for it. More now from CNN's senior international correspondent, Fred Plytkin.
A devastating blow to Vladimir Putin's war effort in Ukraine, both strategically and symbolically. The Kerch Bridge that links Russia's mainland with occupied Crimea on fire and heavily damaged. Moscow's investigative committee acknowledging the severity of the attack.
According to preliminary information, a truck exploded on the automobile part of the Crimean Bridge from the side of the Taman Peninsula in the morning today, which caused seven fuel tanks to ignite on a train heading towards the Crimean Peninsula. As a result, two lanes partially collapsed.
This CCTV video appears to show the moment of the blast. A truck is seen driving on the lane leading towards Crimea when all of a sudden there's a massive explosion, though it's not clear whether it is the truck that actually blew up. Russian officials saying several people were killed in the attack. Moscow already pointing the finger at Ukraine, but so far no claim of responsibility from Kiev's leadership. While Russian authorities say fuel and food supplies to Crimea are insured, videos released on social media show long lines forming at gas stations on the peninsula just hours after the blast. The Crimean Bridge is a vital supply artery for Russian forces fighting in Ukraine, but it's also a prestige project for Russian President Vladimir Putin. Putin personally drove a truck across the bridge when it was opened in 2018. The attack came just a day after Putin's 70th birthday. Moscow says it got the railway section of the bridge up and running again quickly, but the damage to the road section is more extensive, creating another bottleneck for Russian forces in southern Ukraine, already struggling with logistics. Fred Plytkin, CNN, Kiev.
On the first Friday of every month, the United States receives a jobs report which gives an overall summary on the state of the U.S. economy. Last Friday's report showed a still strong but slowing job market when compared to previous months. The unemployment rate fell to 3.5%, near the lowest in 50 years. The economy is still maintaining some momentum despite high interest rates, which is causing some investors to feel that inflation may be tougher to fight, increasing worries of recession. The report showed hiring was up across a variety of industries, including manufacturing, which added 22,000 jobs. We're going to head now to a training facility in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that's preparing workers for the increase in labor opportunities in the manufacturing industry, where many factories report a need for skilled workers.
At this training facility in Pittsburgh, job seekers are learning new skills to seize on a post-pandemic spike in manufacturing.
What's really heightened the issue of the big need and the big demand for these types of individuals is with the coupling of COVID and the individuals that were already looking to retire in the next 3 to 4 years.
Neil Ashbaugh is president and CEO of New Century Careers.
Come back.
It's a nonprofit for adults looking to enter the industry in the most competitive environment in years.
We have individuals that are completing these skilled training programs and yet are going out on 5, 6, 7 interviews. And those companies are all competing for that single source skilled individual.
Since 2020, U.S. manufacturing has increased its profits by more than $200 billion, offering hundreds of thousands of jobs each month. So what's behind the latest boost? At the Jennison Corporation, workers are busy making everything from firefighters' equipment to construction machinery. Hayden Jennison says recent supply chain issues overseas mean more new customers.
It was taking months for parts to not only get manufactured but come across, and they decided that they were willing to pay U.S. manufacturing pricing to be able to get that much faster.
Pricing and product demands have changed drastically in recent years. When service industries became scarce over the pandemic, demand for consumer products and, of course, PPE and medical equipment kept factory workers essential.
We often take a look at the images of manufacturing and we see the sparks flying in a welding environment, or perhaps it's a little bit dingy, dark. But by and large, our manufacturing jobs today are high tech.
But today's techs are also requiring higher salaries and more flexibility.
We've had to significantly raise our wages to stay competitive in the industry.
Jennison says there's enough work to staff another full shift at this facility, but even at $20 to $30 an hour, finding the right team has been difficult.
10-second trivia. The U.S. Supreme Court first convened in what U.S. city? Washington, D.C., New York, Boston, or Philadelphia? In 1790, the Supreme Court first met in New York, later moved to Philadelphia, and then settled in Washington, D.C., where it hears cases today. Today, the Supreme Court is hearing a case that could decide the Internet's future. A new threat to the Internet? It all started back in 1996 when the Communications Decency Act was created to protect free speech online. But both Democrats and Republicans believe the law makes social media companies too powerful by shielding them from getting sued when users post harmful content on their platforms. The case could impact companies that don't remove content even when it violates their policies. We'll hear more now from CNN digital producer John Sarlin, who's exploring what this all means.
Mark, can you just give us a quick rundown of Section 230 and why it's relevant to these two cases?
Yeah, so Section 230 is sort of the foundational law of the Internet, and it says when people post stuff on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube that might be illegal, objectionable, defamatory, those platforms can't be sued. So they're not like the New York Times, which can be sued if it publishes something defamatory. They're special. They're different. And the idea here was to ensure that 1,000 flowers could bloom on the Internet, that platforms wouldn't be stymied from allowing all of this speech, and that they could moderate content as they saw fit without worrying about any kind of legal ramifications. But this was in the mid-90s when Congress did not understand the Internet and very few of us foresaw what was going to happen to it. The challenges facing Section 230 today are very different.
Let's say the Supreme Court does go ahead and gut or repeal Section 230. Can we even imagine what an Internet without it would look like at this point?
It's impossible to imagine, because we all know that these algorithms are like the business model of social media. They rely on these algorithms to moderate a mind-boggling amount of content all the time. And what the platforms are telling the Supreme Court is, look, there's just no way that we can design a perfect algorithm that isn't going to sometimes mess up and put a alarming or dangerous speech in front of eyeballs where it shouldn't be. They're saying that this is a fundamental threat to their existence, because if the Supreme Court opens up liability under these circumstances, they're going to have to either recalibrate all of their algorithms or rely on human beings to moderate every bit of content on their website, which would not be possible even if they hired an army of 1 billion content moderators. It just can't be done.
And meow for today's 10 out of 10. Meet Fenrir, who set the new Guinness Book of World Records mark for tallest living domestic cat, standing at 18.83 inches from floor to shoulder. So you've got to be kidding me. This Michigan-based kitty is an F2 Savannah cat, a hybrid between a domestic cat and a serval, a wild cat native to Africa. Fenrir's owner nicknamed him the Chonk and says he's so tall that he paws at handles to open doors and steals food off of countertops. Bad kitty. All right, now on to my favorite part of the day. A special shout out to you, and specifically to the American International School of Budapest. We hope you and everyone watching around the world have a wonderful one. I'm Coy, this is CNN 10, and I'll see you tomorrow.